Tonight's scripture reading is going to be from John chapter 14, verses 1 through 6. John 14, 1 through 6, and I'll be reading from the ESV. ESV. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house there are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me.
I can stand here at this mic. Is it on now? Okay. All right, now we're good. After our little microphone dance there, my clock now says 6:22. And I understand that originally the honor flight was supposed to be back at 6:30. And a couple people told me they thought maybe I was speaking tonight because I would get you out quick enough. But I don't know if 8 minutes is going to cover it. Luckily, so I heard, yeah, they're not going to be back till 9 o'clock. So I brought plenty of stuff to keep us going till then. I don't know if it's at 9 o'clock, but I'll get you out by at least 8:30. In 1972, Judith Viorst wrote the children's book Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. A lot of you have probably read this yourself or read it to your children or grandchildren. But here's a little bit from the Alexander book. He says, I went to sleep with gum in my mouth, and now there's gum in my hair. And when I got out of bed, I tripped over my skateboard, and by my mistake, I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was still running. And I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. He said he had a bad day at school. He had a painful visit to the dentist. And then he said that when he got home, we had lima beans for dinner. And I hate lima beans. And there was kissing on TV. And I hate kissing on TV. My bath was too hot. I got soap in my eyes. My marble went down the drain. And I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. And I hate my railroad train pajamas. It's been a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Have you ever had a day like that? Or maybe longer than just a day like that? Y'all remember January? That seemed to be a pretty rough month, right? It rained every day. Everything that could go wrong was happening. Once we rolled into February 1st, I told Amanda, I said, man, January was a long year, but we made it. And while it's funny and maybe even a little bit therapeutic sometimes to joke about our bad days, after the fact, when we're in the middle of those bad days or a bad month or a bad year, it's really anything but funny, isn't it? It's tough. Bad days aren't fun. Bad weeks are even less fun. But looking to God's Word and His advice on how to handle bad days, while it won't take the bad days away, it might help take away some of their sting and to help us realize that for a Christian, better days will always be ahead. So let's take some time tonight. Let's look at a few ways that the Bible tells us we can face bad days. Look at James chapter 1. I think the first way we can look at tonight to face a bad day is to face it with endurance. James chapter 1 begins like this. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness or endurance have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Man, how can someone like James say, count it joy when you have a bad day? When you have a bad day, let's jump up and down and sound the siren and shoot fireworks because we're so glad we had a bad day. That's the last thing on our mind. The way he talks about it producing endurance, though, and making us stronger, I think a lot about when I was playing basketball in high school. We had a coach at the very beginning of the season, even before tryouts. We'd walk into the gym, and he'd tell us to start running. And there would be 4 minutes. The first day, there was 4 minutes on the big clock. And we had to run for 4 minutes. And we'd run as hard as we could. Of course, we were out of shape, you know, from a long summer of not doing anything. And at the end of 4 minutes, we were tired. The next practice, it was 8 minutes. And finally, we got to 16 minutes. And we ran for 16 minutes straight. And nobody wanted to be the last one. You know, nobody wanted to be the last in line. So we were all kind of running hard. At the end of 16 minutes, we were gassed. And we were, you know, bending over, hands on our knees, trying to catch our breath. And he said, "You realize you've only ran for one half of a game. You're not even ready. You're not even ready." And his point was, we needed to build up some endurance. We needed to be ready for those hard times in the game. We need to be ready to be able to sprint up and down the court and outrun our opponents. We all face bad days, and nobody wants to have a bad day. But when we do have bad days, when we can face them with endurance, when we can conquer that bad day, it makes it a lot easier to face bad days in the future, doesn't it? And when we go through something tough and we have the endurance to know how we made it through, it helps us to be able to help others find that endurance to push through. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. Because I think along with the endurance, we see some endurance here in Hebrews chapter 12, but I think not just endurance, but there's also some joy. And James talks about consider it joy when you face these things. Hebrews 12, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witness, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted." Again, kind of in the same idea with the endurance, facing it with joy. Why did Jesus take that kind of endurance? Why did he go to the cross? It says, for the joy that was set before him. There's a lot of tasks that I do not find joy in doing, but I find joy in completion. Are you the same way? I don't like mowing my yard. I really don't like mowing my yard. But at the end of the day, when I've mowed it and I've weed-eated it and trimmed it and everything looks great, man, I take a lot of joy in looking at a clean, good yard. We don't like cleaning the house, but we like having a clean house. Some of us don't like going to work, but we like having a paycheck. That paycheck brings us a lot of happiness, right? Facing bad times with joy, and not the pretend kind of joy, not the pretend kind of happiness, pretending everything was okay, but a realization that everything's not okay, but one day everything will be okay. Facing bad days with that, understanding that things are going to get better, that's facing it with joy, and that's going to help us and understand that things will be okay. That's the kind of joy that we see in the Bible described to us, an understanding that happiness is fleeting. And if we do things and we chase happiness, we're going to chase for a long time. C.S. Lewis talks about that in his book, Surprised by Joy. But joy being something that is unchanging, even in bad days, we can have joy. And facing our bad days with joy, that understanding that, you know, things are rough, but they'll get better. And number three is understanding that there is good in everything. Look at Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, beginning at we'll just read verse 28. And this is a tough one. This is a tough one because we talk about facing problems with endurance and facing problems with joy. I think those are things that I can wrap my head around. But when we talk about Romans 8:28, understanding that there's going to be good in something, that's kind of tough for me. And this is what it says. "We know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. And this is really, like I said, this is a double-edged passage, because it's very easy, it's a very easy one to read to folks who are going through and facing bad times. It's an easy one to say, hey, listen, this is good for you. There's something good that's going to be found in this. But when you're going through bad times, it's a really hard one to read, isn't it? When you're the one on the side of the hard times. You mean in order to make something good happen, God has to make me hurt like this? You mean God took my health or my loved one or my job and it's supposed to be a good thing? I went to college with a man, maybe some of you got an author that maybe some of y'all have heard of. His name is Michael Whitworth, and he does a lot of seminars around the country on dealing with grief, and Michael understands grief. He tragically lost his father, and then a few years later, he tragically lost his young son. And Michael says, we live really in a grief illiterate society. It's tough to understand others' grief sometimes. It's tough to know the right things. Even if we've dealt with grief ourselves, we still find it hard to help others through their grief and help others see the good in a bad situation. And when we are in the midst of a bad situation, it is nearly impossible for us to see any good in that situation. And the fact that good will occur, and the fact that knowing good will occur, does not always take away the pain of a bad situation, but if we have joy, we can count on good coming. Job lost everything, but I don't believe he ever stopped mourning for the children he lost, because God restored everything to him, I don't think it ever took away that pain. But he also never left God. He also never left God through all of that. David lost his best friend and was hunted like an animal by the father of his best friend. And he cries out to God in Psalm 13, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How many times have we been there with David? Are you forgetting about me? Do you know the pain that I'm going through right now? David finishes his psalm by saying, I've trusted in your steadfast love, and my heart will rejoice in your salvation, and I will sing to the Lord because he's dealt bountifully with me. It's hard. It's hard to see the good, but we know that the good will come. We know that God will provide the good. William Shakespeare, in Hamlet, he wrote, Hamlet tells Rosencrantz, there is nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And I'm not saying that changing our perspective can make ourselves have a good day when things are going bad. I cannot say that changing our perspective can make good things happen when there are truly bad things happening. But I do know that sometimes we have to look, and we have to really look. And sometimes we have to wait, because it's not always clear immediately. And all the time we have to have faith, but eventually things will work together for good. And we have to trust that promise is there, that something good will happen. And by saying something good will happen doesn't mean something good will take away the bad thing, or something good will happen that was even greater than the bad thing that's happened, because that's impossible. And that's silly to even think that. But good things can happen, and we need to take comfort in that. We also need to face bad days with faith and not fear. Look at Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2. This is Jesus speaking to the church at Smyrna, one of the seven churches in Asia that the letters are written to. And it says, to the angel of the church of Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last who died and came to life. I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you're rich. And the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil's about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested for 10 days, and for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I'll give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who conquers will not be hurt by the second death. You notice he says Smyrna is rich, but Christians in Smyrna choose poverty. They choose poverty because they refuse to participate in worship to the emperor. They refuse to compromise their beliefs. And you know, just pinching a little incense or just doing a little bit of emperor worship would allow them things like the ability to go and buy and sell and trade in the marketplace and be able to buy goods for fair prices. Because they refuse to compromise, they're not allowed to do this. And so they're poor. They're poor. And Jesus, speaking to the church at Smyrna, says, do not fear things that you're about to suffer. And no doubt, they would absolutely suffer. Not just their poverty, but things were about to get a lot worse for them. He says, some of you will have tribulation 10 days. And he's not even saying that if you can hold out for a week and a half, things are going to get better. That's not what he's saying at all. Because when he uses the word 10 days, that is a word picture that's telling these Christians living in Rome, when they read that, they understand it's not 10 days. This is a complete period of time. This is the rest of their life. Some of you, for the rest of your life, will face tribulation. Some of you will die. Be faithful. Be faithful through all these tough times, and you will conquer what he says is the second death. You will conquer the second. The first death, you're probably not going to conquer, but nobody is. We're all going to get that one. But be faithful unto the first death, and you will conquer the second one. Do not be afraid, is what he tells them. Do not be afraid. That's a tough thing to say, isn't it? Do not be afraid. I heard somebody say one time that bravery is not the absence of fear. That bravery is being afraid and still doing what needs to be done. And bad days can be scary, and I think it's absolutely okay for us to be afraid. But I think we need to be afraid and keep going anyway. I think that's what God would have us to do, and I think that's what we need to do when we face our bad days. Be faithful. If we need to be afraid, we can be afraid a little bit, but be faithful. Understand that God's going to be there and take care of us. Another way that we can face bad days is without losing heart. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and we'll begin in verse 7. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7, it says, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We are afflicted in every way, but we're not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, but not destroyed. So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is still being renewed day by day. For this light, momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. And as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen, for the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. We have so much more to look forward to. How many of you were ever told growing up, if you eat that, you're going to ruin your supper? Anybody ever heard that? I was told that many times, if you can't tell. You might want a little snack before dinner, but don't do that. You're going to ruin something even greater. I remember on car rides, we used to take road trips all the time to Texas to see our family back in San Antonio. And we might stop at a gas station to get some gas and maybe go in there and grab a candy bar or a bag of peanuts. And I remember my parents saying, no, you're going to ruin your supper. Now, that was a big deal because I knew that in a half hour or so, if we're going to be eating supper pretty soon, we were going to go to Bill Miller Barbecue. Anybody know Bill Miller Barbecue? Anybody? That's good stuff. Bill Miller Barbecue. I didn't want to waste Bill Miller Barbecue for some lousy candy bar or a bag of peanuts, so I'd put those back. Because you know what? 30 minutes wasn't that long to wait for some Bill Miller Barbecue. Didn't want to ruin my supper. And even though I felt like I was wasting away, I could wait an extra half hour for some Bill Miller. Paul reminds us, he says, even though we literally are wasting away, we are wasting away, we aren't here long. And this is a light and momentary affliction that is preparing us. What's it preparing us for? Paul says light and momentary affliction. And I wonder sometimes if Paul belittling the affliction and the bad days that we face? Does Paul really understand how bad things can be? But then I remember, yeah, if someone can understand bad days, it's Paul, right? He had some pretty bad ones. He had some pretty rough days. And I wonder if maybe it's Paul making a comparison and saying the worst day we can imagine on earth, as bad as it could possibly get, whatever the world can throw at us, is light and easy compared to an eternal separation from our God. That kind of puts things in perspective sometimes, doesn't it? Because we've all had some bad days. And to consider that those bad days are light compared to what eternity away from the Father would be. Preparation for glory beyond compare. We can't fully understand what good is until we know what bad is. Do I care about a land that has no sickness, no dying, no tears? I want to go there because I understand sickness and I understand tears and I understand dying. I don't want to be in a world that has those things. I want to be in that land with no tears. Another way we can face our bad days is allowing others to fulfill the law of Christ. Galatians 6:2, just one verse. You can turn there if you like. We're only going to read part of the verse. It says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And you know, I think we're really good at this verse, at least most of it. We bear others' burdens selflessly all the time. You bear others' burdens selflessly all the time. Yesterday, hundreds of people from our community entered our building, and you generously gave them cleaning supplies and food that you purchased with your money over the last several weeks. You helped bear a great burden for folks who were in need. And that's, while that's no small endeavor, how many of us find that to be so much easier to bear someone else's burdens than it would be to allow someone to bear our own, right? I think most of us would say, I'd much rather carry your burden than you to carry mine. Let me ask you a question, something to think about. Those of you who are here this morning when we passed the communion trays and the bread came through, how many of you thought about slapping the bread out of the person's hand who was sitting next to you just as they were trying to eat? How many of y'all thought, maybe I'll just slap that bread away onto the floor and not let them have it? Or how many of y'all, as you were entering into church this morning, thought about, hey, I'm gonna wrestle this person down and hold them here so they can't go into worship? That's ridiculous, right? I don't think anybody had those. If you had those thoughts, I mean, let's talk later. I don't think anybody had a thought like that. You're very good people. But what are we doing when we don't allow others the opportunity to help us carry a burden? You know, we wouldn't slap the bread away from someone because we're preventing someone an opportunity for serving God. Are we doing the same thing when we don't allow someone to carry our burden? And what would happen if we all decided that no one is going to carry our burden? According to Paul and what he just said in that short verse, we would not be able to fulfill the law of Christ. When bad days come, it's God's plan, it's God's design, and it is His law that we allow our brothers and sisters to help us carry our load. And I'm beyond thankful for so many that have done that for me this year. It's been a tough year for our family. Tim stepped in and preached the day after I was laid off. Preached for me. It was my responsibility. He covered it. Short notice. Renee Gillum, along with several volunteers, covered our finals week breakfast for me last week when I was with my mother in hospital. Good friends and brothers filled in for me at High Rock Bible Camp last weekend when I couldn't be there. Over the last week and a half or so, Chig Gunner and Ken Letterman and Brandon Quisenberry and Steve Williams and Tim Hall and Trey and Chris in England and probably so many more that I don't even know about stepped up and made sure that our SOS, our Streams of Sharing event, happened even though I was pretty much missing in action. I couldn't be there. I could not make it without you carrying my burdens. And I'm so grateful to that. And we need to, and it's not easy. It's not easy to let someone carry your burden and to admit, I can't do it. I can't do it. But that's what our family is here for. And that's what we're all about. When we have bad days, if we want to make it through, we have to have the courage to let someone know, I need your help. I need your help. As long as we live on earth, we can count on facing bad days. That's an absolute given. We will face bad days. Mark Mitchell, I don't know if a lot of you know Mark, but you need to get to know Mark. He's a great one of our med students here. He taught a lesson in the college group a few months ago, and part of one of his points was, you know, Mother Nature is kind of a jerk. She's always out there trying to kill us. There's all kinds of things in our world that are out there just trying to kill us, you know? Too much sun, too much water, the wrong kind of water, lightning, wild animals, insects, diseases, all kinds of things. When we step outside, or even before we even step outside, there's so many things trying to attack us. We can have a bad day. I was telling someone earlier, you know, when I get old, I'm done with cold weather. I'm done with cold weather. My goal now for the rest of my life is make sure my kids get 3 square meals a day and they're covered and have clothes and whatever. But every other dollar is going towards, there's going to be a day when I don't have to face cold weather anymore. And I'm going to get a place in Florida or Texas or something, and I'll go back and forth. I'll be one of these snowbirds and come back when it gets too hot down there. Because I don't like being cold. Wouldn't it be great to be able to have a place, to be able to escape every awful thing this world has to throw at us? A place of safety and of comfort. It was just read for us, Trey just read for us in John chapter 14. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house there are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, and where I am, you may be also. That's where I want to be. That's where I want to be. A room in the Father's house that's been prepared for me. Not a lonely old empty mansion, but a place of comfort, where my family will be, my brothers and sisters will be. Jesus continues in verse 4, and you know the way to where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? And Jesus said to him, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. Don't you want to go there? The land of no bad days, no more bad days. This world is tough, and this world is mean, and there are days that I just don't want to be here. But through Jesus, we have so much better laid before us. We can have confidence that we're going to that place that is so much better, the end of bad days. And while we're here, we need to know and understand how to face the bad days. But you know what? If we're not a faithful child of God, those bad days are just the beginning. If we're a faithful child of God, that's as bad as it's ever going to get for us. If you need to be a faithful child of God and realize that these bad days, that'll be it. That momentary affliction will be gone before we know it. If you need to put Christ on in baptism to ensure the end of your bad days, then why not do that tonight? Faith, repentance, confessing Jesus Christ as the Son of God and being buried with Him in baptism. If there's anything else we can do, if we can pray for you and help you through your bad days, whatever your need may be, please come as together we stand and sing.